We're going to try this for round two. Good morning. The Education Quality Subcommittee will now come to order. For the record, please remember to turn on your microphones for roll call. And Misty, please call the roll.
Chair Trabolsi?
Here.
Vice Chair Temple is excused. Ranking Member Benjamin? Representative Alvarez?
Here, ma'am.
Representative Beltran?
Here.
Representative Kennedy?
Here.
Representative Casello?
Here.
Representative Chamberlain is excused. Representative Daniels?
Here.
Representative Franklin?
Here.
Representative Gant?
Here.
Representative Garcia?
Present.
Representative Jill Lombardo is excused. Representative Gonzalez-Pittman?
Present.
Representative Plasencia is excused. Representative Tomko? Representative Yeager?
Here.
Thank you, Misty. And good morning, members. Welcome back to committee, and thank you, visitors, for being here today. Before we begin, please remember to silence all of your cell phones. This morning, I've requested presentations on chronic absenteeism, what it is, how the state defines it, and the impact on student performance. I've also asked Dr. Paul Burns, the Chancellor of the Division of K-12 Public Schools, to join us for this discussion to answer any questions from members specific to Florida and its current definitions and interventions. Chronic absenteeism is linked with diminished learning outcomes and an increased likelihood of negative outcomes, like dropping out of high school, that can divert students from paths to post-secondary and professional success. I've been diving into this issue for about 16 months. Last year, it was brought to my attention, and to be quite honest, I didn't pay it much attention. This summer, I had the opportunity to visit Helios in Arizona and really workshop what the importance of this subject matter is and how important it is for our children to show up for school and some of the reasons why they don't. And we're going to be listening to different cause and effects today. We have two presentations. If you noticed when you came in today, each of you were given statistics. These are current, these are hot off the press, statistics of your own school district and what the chronic absenteeism rates are. And I would like to thank Attendance Works for putting that together for us. So thank you very much. At this time, we will be joined by Hetty Chang. Hetty is the Executive Director and President of Attendance Work. Ms. Chang, thank you for joining us today, and you are recognized to present.
Good morning, everyone. I am not sure if you can hear me, but I realize I actually can't hear any of you. So I know we're working through the tech difficulties, but thank you so much for inviting me and engaging me and allowing Attendance Works to be here with you today. I'm going to start to share my screen. So we'll start. I'm so sorry, I'm a little caught off guard by not being able to hear anyone at all. So just a second. So good morning. Such a pleasure to be able to join you. And I'm here to talk about why addressing chronic absenteeism at this moment is such an essential ingredient of pandemic recovery. And let me make sure, great, everyone can see it, and hopefully everyone can hear me. Just a little bit of background. Attendance Works operates at the local, state, and the national level. We really see this work as building up from local champions. And through the knowledge we gain from working on the ground in places across the country, we catalyze needed research, we innovate innovative practice, we promote awareness through strategic communications, we advance policy, especially because we actually have a network that brings together states across the country to share and learn from each other. And our work again, is directly informed by practice on the ground. Over 400,000 people visit our website every year, making use of our resources, so they don't have to reinvent the wheel or reinvent actually lessons learned about what not to do or but what are things that start to work to improve attendance. I'm here today to talk to you about chronic absence, and I want to just do a little bit of leveling of the playing field. When we talk about chronic absence, we're looking at how much school, when do kids miss so much school that they're actually academically at risk? And now it's broadly defined as missing 10% or more of school for any reason. That is a recommended definition from us because of research and because we want this to serve as an early warning sign. So if kids miss too much school for any reason, excused, unexcused, suspensions, then they're not there to benefit from what school offers in terms of instruction, in terms of engagement, all the things that we want kids to have. They need to be there enough to be able to benefit from it. And if you use it as a 10% metric, you can use it as an early warning sign, 2 days in the first month, 4 days in the second month, 6 days in the third month, so that we can identify and notice when kids are off track due to absenteeism, so that we can actually take steps and make sure things improve before it is much more costly and difficult to change the trajectory. Improving attendance matters because starting in pre-K and first, it really allows you to read by the end of, it ensures that you're gonna be able to read by the end of third grade, or it predicts that you're not going to. If you are chronically absent, it actually predicts higher suspension rates, lower achievement in middle school, and a greater likelihood to drop out in high school. Let me show you some of the slides. This is data that shows, I know that in Florida, like in many other places, third grade reading is really critical. But if kids start to be chronically absent, even starting in pre-K, every year of that absenteeism leads kids to be much less likely to be able to read proficiently by the end of third grade. And similarly, if you look at what's happening in middle school and high school, every year of chronic absence in middle and high school makes this child much more likely to drop out. Chronic absence, though, is different from other typical attendance terms, and it's really important to know the difference. So often we think about average daily attendance, and that tells you how many kids typically show up each day. It tells you things like, oh, the day after Halloween is not such a good day. We better do more engaging work. Or half-day parent-teacher conference days seem to be a challenge for families to get to school. Or it tells you things like, you know, the winter months are really challenging because some of the kids just don't have the kind of clothes and gear to get to school. But while that tells you what's happening for a school as a whole or a population as a whole, it can mask individual students who are missing so much school that they're academically at risk. Well, this is also different from truancy. Truancy is what we've had as a country for a long, long time. It looks at only unexcused absences. It's part of compulsory ed, so it says, if you don't show up to school, then we might threaten you with court and legal action. Typically comes from a bit more of a blaming and a punitive approach to make sure those kids who are missing school willfully get back to school. Chronic absence is really saying, I want to look at all absences, and I want everyone to know that when kids miss school, it has an adverse impact on learning, on your engagement because you're not connected to peers, on maybe access to resources. And it's really the notion, because we know that chronic absence is higher when kids have adverse early childhood experiences. And when that happens, the key is not saying, what's wrong with you, but what happened? How can I help you? And to engage students and families in a problem-solving way so we can address the challenges that caused them to miss school in the first place. And that's the key to improvement. It's also important to be able to look at chronic absence by grade. And here's chronic absence by grade in Florida. And you can see you have extraordinarily high rates of chronic absence starting in the early grades. And then often it starts to get worse when you go back into the high school years. And knowing chronic absence by grade can help you think about where you need to target resources. And we especially have to be worried about our youngest students, because if we don't cultivate them into a better habit of attendance, even if their attendance improves some, but they missed out on the fundamental foundational skills that they need to start school off with in kindergarten and first, they could still be falling behind in third grade when they are maybe more likely to even show up to school a little more because health issues get better, kids are more connected to kids. But that chronic, but showing up in the early grades is so essential to making sure you gain those skills that are foundational to later school success. Now, a lot of times we think about chronic absence in terms of just the kids who are chronically absent, but it's not just the kids who are chronically absent who are affected by chronic absence. It's also when you're in a school with 20% or more levels of chronic absence, then the churn that's happening in that situation, the impact on both teaching and learning is affecting all kids. And nationwide, we're seeing that a majority of schools now have at least 20% or more levels of chronic absence. In Florida, that is nearly 70% of your schools now. And that is a huge increase since before the pandemic. Now, I want to go back to something I said before when talking about the definitions. What reduces chronic absence and improves attendance really requires addressing underlying causes of absenteeism, which are typically not solved through punitive action. In fact, all the research on punitive approaches just show it doesn't actually affect change. And that's because it's not getting at the underlying issues that cause kids to miss school, whether that's barriers, poor transportation, housing instability, lack of access to health services, or whether that's aversion because kids are feeling anxiety or the school climate is not welcoming, or they're having social and peer challenges, or maybe they've got undiagnosed disabilities that are causing them not to want to be in school, or is it and pushing them out of school, or is it the lack of engagements in school because they don't have meaningful relationships to their peers or to equally important to the adults? Or is it misconceptions because they don't recognize that showing up matters, especially amongst our youngest learners, that can be a challenge. And their families don't realize that kindergarten isn't necessarily what kindergarten was when we were in kindergarten. And now being there every day actually is crucial for learning. Or a lot of times folks in the wake of a pandemic, they actually aren't sure about when to keep kids home or when to send them to school when you have a symptom of illness. And high levels of chronic absence reflect an erosion in positive conditions for learning, making sure that kids come to school when they feel physically, emotionally healthy and safe, when they feel a sense of belonging, connection, support, when they feel academic challenge and engagement, when they are surrounded by adults and students who can invest in those relationships that are so crucial to all of these elements. And when you see high levels of chronic absence, and I think sometimes before the pandemic, we took for granted that these things exist. And I think the disruptions occurring during a pandemic have really eroded these conditions, and putting them back in place requires an intentional approach. It really requires investing in a multi-tiered system of support that begins with prevention, that begins with creating that belonging, connection, support, ensuring healthy school environments, and then adding on tier one, tier two, or tier three supports when that is not sufficient. But if school's in a place where kids want to be, it's kind of hard to message to them about the importance of school. Those two go hand in hand. So the other tiers depend on the first tier being in place. And putting this in place requires both action at the school level and at the district level. You need teams in place in both places. You need a team at the school level creating a multi-tiered strategy that really is tailored to the local realities and ensures kids who need the support get it, while you have a district team that needs to support making sure folks can look at their data, can unpack it, can making sure that school teams are in place. And by the way, those don't always have to be new school teams. They can be existing school teams that are now equipped with better data. And it's organizing. Maybe you have a district-wide issue around transportation or safety or other things that, in fact, require district and community responses. and you're using your data for continuous improvement. This is really all about having these key ingredients of change, having actionable data, and then using positive engagement to reach out to families to build those partnerships with them so you can understand what their challenges are and what would get them to school, building strategic partnerships, because it's not just on our schools to get our students back to school. There are barriers and challenges in the community, and we need all of us working together. We need to make sure there's adequate resources. Some communities may need more resources than others in order to even the playing field and make sure that all kids can get to school. And this is about shared accountability, not blame, but working together to understand those issues and build the capacity to use our actionable data to inform change. At the state level, there are particularly important things that you all can do. You can ensure consistent, accurate, and comparable data at the school, district, and state level. And that is so important because if you have data that's comparable, you can find places that are positive outliers that might have practices that everyone else should adopt. And you can also identify places that might need more support because their challenge is severe. But if you don't define attendance in the same way, like what's a day of attendance, you can't know whether someone has better data or better outcomes because they have looser guidelines about what it takes, when kids counted as being there, if they're actually engaging in better practice or having challenges. You need to create accountability and alignment around community resources through your public reporting of data. One of the benefits of having clear public reporting of data is it can signal to everyone where there are challenges and where greater investment might be needed. You can advance through state policy, tiered systems of support that begin with prevention. And that's what the research has shown makes a difference. You can also promote the creation of school and district teams when chronic absence levels are high and it indicates a more strategic approach is needed. And you can support through your state policies, technical assistance, guidance, and resources that build the capacity of districts to produce real-time data dashboards, adopt effective strategies as part of school improvement, and use data for outreach and constantly reviewing what's working and where do we need to improve. What we're seeing in Florida and nationwide is that chronic absence is now widespread. Many places that did not have to struggle with chronic absence now do, but it's also concentrated in some places even more, particularly higher poverty districts. And so what you need is an opportunity, the ability to put in place resources that will help everyone, because everyone needs a little bit of help, whether that's guidance, whether that's uniform definitions and policies and procedures for collecting reliable data, whether that's a state messaging campaign that everyone advances. And then where districts need a bit more, you might invest in communities of practice, our targeted investments. In one state that we're working in, they really expanded outreach. So outreach to families who are chronically absent occurred through visitors who, school staff and community partners, who would visit families multiple times in order to make sure they were accessing resources, they were connecting to resources, and they were actually able, this is a learner attendance and engagement program in Connecticut, they were actually able to improve attendance by 15 percentage points on average for the students who got those more intensive community outreach and multiple visits and support. That's an example of a targeted kind of investment. And then for the schools that are still facing really challenging situations, they may need intensive technical assistance coaching because this requires really weaving together and integrating attention to attendance into all of what they do. And that can take a more comprehensive effort and more skills to be able to figure out how to do that. So I can see I'm getting texted. I hear that I'm not quite sure. I think someone can text me about how we're proceeding. The other possibility, if someone even wants to put me on a cell phone, I'm happy to also support the work that way.
Thank you so much, Hetty.
I'm going to stop sharing the screen.
I do not think that she can hear us at this time. But we are going to move along with our next presentation. And once we finalize that presentation, we do have another representative from Attendance Work that will be joining us for questions. So if you can hold your questions just for a few more minutes as we get through the second presentation, it would take a total reboot in order to get Hetty up online, if that would work. So we're going to move along. At this time, I'd like to introduce Mrs. Janice Palmer. Mrs. Palmer is the Senior Vice President and Government Affairs and Public Policy at Helios Education Foundation. She's also become a good friend over the past few months and a great ally. We appreciate you being here today. Thanks for bearing with our technical difficulties. And absolutely. You're recognized and looking forward to your presentation.
Appreciate you being here to talk about such an important issue. And I also wanted to give a huge thank you to staff who's always willing to meet and provide guidance to further enhance Florida's education system. So very much appreciated as well. So who is Helios Education Foundation? We were established in 2006. We were a result of a post-secondary loan servicing company that was sold to the U.S. government. And rather than take the proceeds at that time, the board decided to invest those proceeds into a foundation for in perpetuity. So what we do is every year we give out about $20 to $25 million. We are both in Florida as well as Arizona. That was the servicing territory at the time, and so we decided to invest in those areas as well. Our office is in Tampa and in Florida and in Phoenix in Arizona. Since that time, we've invested over $300 million to further our mission in helping support post-secondary attainment, but we go all the way from the early years to K-12 as well as to post-secondary. So what's the strategy for us? Is that purposeful action focuses on results. So we know that we cannot do it alone, and we know that post-secondary success starts in the very early years. And so we focus on third grade reading, college going and enrollment, and attainment for 2-year and 4-year degrees. And we work with statewide data, and we'll show that a little bit more, but also internal metrics to make sure that we are actually making progress in the work that's happening, because what we do in the next 5 years is going to affect generations ahead of us. We're more than a grant maker. It's important to say that we use public policy, we use research, we use investments, we try to have a wholesale impact and systemic change. And I think the work of chronic absenteeism is a great example, one of many. And one other item that Hetty kind of touched on, and I think why chronic absenteeism elevated to such a level that the chairwoman came out with, is that we can have all of these great programs. We got third grade reading, we can have accelerated coursework, we can have college completion. But if kids aren't in the classroom, what are we doing? And so I think that's really what elevated us to take a look at it. And so if you might, I'll have a quick kind of an Arizona story. And now, as mentioned, we work in both states. However, there's times when Arizona kind of leads some of our work, and there's times when Florida leads our work. And then on this one, Arizona was the first area that we started on. So chronic absenteeism has been on the radar for a number of years. Arizona is a highly mobile state. We have a lot of folks that come into the state. We also have a lot of folks that return to their homes in other areas over the summer for work. And so it was already in the data that we had high chronic absenteeism. However, that's been exacerbated, right, over COVID-19. But one of the things that we did, and I know this is not being contemplated now, but I wanted to at least offer this as one thing that Arizona did, is that since 2016, 2017, as part of the A through F school accountability system, Arizona followed in the footsteps of Florida's example for our A through F accountability system, and we put chronic absenteeism as an accelerator into that system. So not only are we looking at the growth of students, how well they're performing, proficiency, as well as our English language learners, but it's also an accelerator, an incentive for schools to pay attention to their students. And I will share, I was on the technical advisory committee that recommended this, and there was concern from school folks about including this in school profiles because, as Hetty mentioned, you know, schools are not the only ones responsible for chronic absenteeism. There are a lot of factors that go into there. But we were able to have the conversation and say, you know what, you're right. But we also know we need to have students in the classroom. So if we're measuring it and we're focusing on it and we're elevating it, then that gets paid attention to and that gets done. So let's look at that. Let's figure out how we can help with that. So that has been in Arizona's school profile since, like I said, 2016-17, and it continues to this day. And what we'll see too is COVID-19 really accelerated it, especially within, we have 22 tribal communities within Arizona. COVID-19 really devastated those communities, and we saw a significant decline there, as well as in our low-income and special needs population. So with that in mind, we partnered with WestEd, a national nonpartisan research agency, to look at chronic absenteeism. We started in K-8, and right now we have a subsequent study in 9-12, and we're working with CFEED in Florida to start having some research as well started in Florida. And we took a look at these research questions. And if you look at those dates, what are the statewide trends from 2017 to 2021? It was important to take a look at data prior to the pandemic as well as post-pandemic. And then if we could see any characteristics that would show students or schools that are really knocking it out of the ballpark. Who are doing things well, and what are the characteristics that we may need additional assistance? And then what are the trends that are coming out of it? And so if you see in this chart, you know, the one thing that stands out the most to me is obviously chronic absenteeism increased in 2021, but it's at the lower end in August and September. And if you see that there are students already missing more than 10% of school in their first 2 months of the school year. I mean, that's extraordinary to me, 18 days already at the beginning of the school year. And so this is accelerated, it's an issue, and it really just shows that we need to attack this even more profoundly. You'll see that odd line in 2020, that kind of just goes, frankly, Arizona stopped taking attendance. So that's why there's such an anomaly there. But we also want to make sure that we're leading with, or the research takeaways from that was that in Arizona, there is a chronic absenteeism is 10% of the school year. However, there's a huge issue. Arizona, as I mentioned, highly mobile. So the definition that Arizona currently has only includes for one school. So if a student misses 10 days in one school, transitions to another school and misses 8 days, that student would not count in the chronic absenteeism under the current definition. So that's one issue when we talk about what the kind of next steps is, that taking a look at Arizona's definition is not sufficient. We're undercounting. The numbers are not great, but we're even undercounting the chronic absent problem that is there. And then also we saw that especially for our Native American, low income and special needs students, the issues were even more significant on absenteeism. And then the research also said, just like Hetty talked about, it's a lot of work. They're solving for chronic absence is different for each situation, but it is solvable. So I will show a couple of good examples because, you know, sometimes it gets a little depressing. We'll end on an up note. So some next steps, as the research was finalized, Helios engaged with Read On Arizona, which is Arizona's state literacy initiative. It's a collective impact model. It has legislators, as the governor's office, as community groups, all kind of together, that has a key focus on making sure that students are proficient by third grade to read. We held a convening in January 2023 to elevate the issue, and we were so appreciative to have members from the Florida Alliance of Children's Councils and Trust and the Florida Grade Level Reading Campaign. So it was appreciative that they were able to come out. And it was announced that, so for Arizona's next step, it was to create a task force on chronic absence. And so that group has been meeting right now. Policy recommendations will be out early in spring of next year. And one of the issues, obviously, the definition we're taking a look at, but also some incentives that can take place. That's the preliminary discussion that is going on right now. And then also, Helios has invested in a Florida-Arizona partnership. And that, Madam Chairwoman, where you're kind enough to come out, just to, you know, we always welcome in Arizona, but we will be kind enough not to, again, invite you in August. It'll be a beautiful time of the year to come out. But it includes... It's a broader coalition to look at early learning and early literacy, but chronic absence was a key issue. And so that is where the next steps there for Arizona. So we want to lead with data. And the Read On Arizona, the state literacy organization that I mentioned, They are collaborating with Maricopa Association of Governments, who has all sorts of data, about transportation, road tracks, poverty, early childhood centers, and so that we can take a deeper dive onto what that looks like. And I'm going to see if we're able to do this live. And you'll see on your next slide, I have a screenshot just so that you're able to kind of as a takeaway. Oh. Well, I was going to give a demonstration, but you'll see a screenshot in the next slide of, and this shows chronic absence. And what is created on this map, it's interactive, and you can put in any of the items that you want to take a look at. So if you want to take a look at early learning centers, that's in the upper left-hand corner there. And you can take a look at, you know, what kind of facility type, is it private, is it public? What kind of offerings are offered there? You can look at the P12 schools, which this is the area I wanted to focus in on. And if you look here, the only overlay on this screenshot is chronic absence. So you can take a look across the state, be able to show where chronic absence is low, where it's medium, where it's high, and you can start taking a look at peer schools to take a look at what are they doing well, where are they challenged, and put other overlays on there. You know, do they have childcare facilities? Maybe that's one of the challenges. Are there transportation issues? So you can start diving deep into what the issues are and start formulating some of those solutions. And you know, Florida is lucky enough to have the Florida Gap Map that the Florida Chamber of Commerce has been working on. Absenteeism has been included in there as well, and they keep enhancing that work. So it's fantastic. We have a great partnership with them, and kudos, because I think, you know, data is important. It kind of drives us, whenever there's disagreement, kind of drives us more to the solution. So I promised that we would end on a happy note, on a positive note. So two success stories, and chose these examples specifically because they are different. So talk about Tanque Verde Unified and Washington Elementary. So the first one, Tanque Verde School District, it is in the southern Arizona. It's a mid to high income K-12 district. And they started looking at their data in 2018, and overall, they're probably one of the higher performers within the state of Arizona. But they took a look at Agua Caliente School, and they looked at Tanque Verde Elementary School, as well as their whole district, and said, you know what? We've created a statewide progress meter to say that we want at least 70% of our students to be reading at third grade at a proficiency level. We're not at this point, and we're really struggling in certain areas. So what they did is they put together a comprehensive professional learning community that provided clarity, focus, and relationship building, with chronic absenteeism being part of it, but really on building the relationships within the school districts and making sure within the schools of the district, and making sure that teachers had the support that they needed for the relationship with students. Fast forward to 2022, you can see that Agua Caliente is actually the highest performing on third grade proficiency. But I think to reinforce what Hetty mentioned is that it's not just focusing on the challenge, it lifted all boats. If you look, the district improved, as well as Tanque Verde Elementary. So another one, Washington Elementary School District, it's the largest K-8 district in the state of Arizona. It's high poverty. It's a very, very mobile population of students. And in 2018-2019, they created this tier of intervention for attendance. So what Hetty talked about at the national level, how do we intervene light to begin with, a little bit more, and then heavier? And they did this work basically to be ready coming out of the pandemic so that we could really be intensive. They had a chronic absentee problem beforehand. They anticipated it was going to be more difficult coming out of the pandemic. So here's what they did. They took a look, the district tracked attendance rates by school, by month, with goal. So they knew exactly where each of the schools were. And with the attendance rate by month, they wanted to get to over a 90%. They ended up at 92.15. There's another slide that I didn't include in there, but over this year of doing these interventions, they've had a 12% reduction in chronic absenteeism across the district. What else did they do? So as mentioned, you know, high mobility, high poverty. And so for this school district, it was very important to have, to get the families involved, making sure that families had a commitment as well to get their students to school. So they created an Attendance Matters campaign to educate students of why this is important. The schools were involved with daily affirmations and goal setting. So every single school had an attendance goal. And then you would have, you see the kind of fun with the principals of talking about a student that really made progress. That would be part of the announcement over the intercom of really enforcing positive behavior. And also, we see you. We see you when you're arriving at school, and we value the relationship and you being part of this community. And then the pumpkins. And then we have biweekly attendance celebrations for the students. So the students also have a reinforcement that they are valued, we want them in school, and the, and you know, these small little indicators are there. They also, I don't have a picture of this, but they also provide small little stipends for like pizza to the families as well. So again, that the family is also part of the solution within the system. And this is just another recognition assembly as well for great attendance. So they've done a great job. And with that, Madam Chairwoman, happy to answer any questions and so appreciate the opportunity to be before you.
Thank you so much for your presentation, Janice. I'm gonna invite Chancellor Burns up and Anika Williams from Attendance Work. And Michelle Watson, if you'd like to join us too with FACT. Members, I'm gonna open this up to questions that you may have regarding our presentations today. Representative Gant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the definitions of chronic absenteeism in Arizona and Florida, what are the differences? Are they the same definition one? And if not, what are the definitions?
I'm gonna open this up to open recognition. Please just speak freely. We're gonna keep this as informal as we can.
Representative. So in Arizona, the definition in statute right now is specifically for accountability purposes. So 10% or more, 18 days, there's 180 school days required for in Arizona public schools. As far as for any kind of graduation or other requirement, that's not provided.
I think Chancellor Burns, can you answer that for Florida, please?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. What we do is when we look at chronic absenteeism, what we do is we track two different sets of data, and we track those students, the number of students that are absent 21 days or more, and we track that on our website. And then as Helios was sharing with the data, we also, on our Know Your Schools portal, we have that kind of data and information on there as well. We also track another data point, and that is the number of students that are absent 10% or more. So we track both of those data points. As schools are working together to identify students who are absent. There's also what I would add is our early warning system that is outlined in statute. And so we track as a part of our early warning system. Again, there are certainly several factors that we track as part of our early warning system. It's really a set of indicators that schools and districts are using to really determine if students are on track to making academic progress. And as a part of that early warning system, one of the indicators we do track is the absentee rate, those students that are below 90%. So we track that as well in our early warning system.
Did you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you. My follow-up question is, Helios, you mentioned that Arizona would track the amount of days in one school and then it would kind of start over when they go to another school. Does Florida do the same thing, or does the absenteeism follow the child and not necessarily the school?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that. So when those students do transfer from school to school, right, the receiving school would receive those records from the school that the student originally attended. And so it's really in fact that both schools, so if a child in a district or even across district lines moves, it's really both schools or both districts that are tracking. So if a student even within the same district moves schools, the school within that district does have access to that student's attendance records so that they can see the progress, they can see if that child has been chronically absent or not. And what would happen then is that study teams actually come together then if that child looks like when they come to school that they're already in danger of having high absenteeism rate. the study teams can get together, and I think as attendance work share, really it's about then working with the families in a collaborative fashion to start developing some root causes about why that child may not be attending school.
Representative Yeager, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and thank you for the presentation today. This is great data. I was curious on, have we identified the top reasons for absenteeism, right? So a lot of great information on stats. Have we just really identified what's causing it, right? I see the root causes of some of the barriers and things like that, but if we just reached out and said, hey, here's our top three reasons why kids are missing school. If it's three, it might be more than three or less.
What we see across the country, it's transportation is usually an issue, as well as healthcare reasons why. Those serve as barriers as to why students are unable to attend school regularly.
And Madam Chair, I would just add also, we're seeing a lot of issues in Arizona of siblings, older siblings required to get their younger siblings to school, making them tardy and absent for the older child. So really trying to work within the school systems for the younger and the older to ensure that both can get to school on time.
Did you have a follow-up?
Yes, please. So with that, to help me understand this, so in Pasco County, where I'm at, we just recently, the school board just recently voted to have four separate four-day weekends, right, to offer parents the ability to take those long weekend vacations or what have you to try to combat. Is parents just deciding we're going to take vacations? Are you seeing that in data that's showing, hey, look, this is actually a part, like parents are just going, hey, yeah, we're just going to take kids out of school for a couple of days and go here, go there. Has that been something that's come up on data?
A 16-year-old to bring their, five-year-old to school. And so it's we're not seeing that parents don't want their kids there, just the barriers for them to be able to get their children there. Chancellor?
Thank you very much, Chair. Representative, thank you for that question. I think what I would say that in Florida, when we look at trends, it really is contextualized per really the family, right? So the circumstances that a family and student may be facing are really individualized. I think the theme really resonated this morning that attendance matters, and when we look at the academic progress and the academic success of students, we know first and foremost that we need our children, our students, present in school, in a classroom with a high quality and highly effective teacher. So I think what I would say is that with our districts here in Florida, our superintendents are working, I think we heard that from attendance works, that it really is about both at the district, looking at those data, knowing those families, and then it also is more importantly at that school level as well. And that's why it becomes so important for us in Florida that our academic study teams, and what I'll do is kind of define what I mean by academic study team, that's generally then that child school administrator, the child school counselor, members of the teaching staff that child may be assigned to, the school social worker, the school psychologist. So it really is a collaborative effort of all of those folks coming together on that study team to address the individual circumstances that each family may be facing. That's where we have seen some success with schools that have improved attendance, is by really collaboratively focusing and helping address the barrier that a family or a student may be encountering.
May I add a comment to that?
Absolutely.
One of the things that we advocate for in Attendance Works is that you cannot case manage your way out of chronic absenteeism. There are thousands. I mean, here in Leon County, there are 13,000 children who are unable to make it to school regularly. And so one of the things that we're pushing, that we do advocate for at Attendance Works, is that you have to use a tiered approach where you have to have strong level, tier ones and tier twos, and reserve the tier three students who are extremely chronically absent for the social workers and school counselors. But again, what we want to push is that it has to be a tiered approach, because we can never case manage our way out of it because of the numbers. And as you can see in Florida data, the numbers continue to rise. And so we've got to be strategic through these tiered approaches to be able to improve student attendance across the state of Florida.
Thank you. And just to give some context here to anybody that might be listening,
In Florida, 31% of our students are considered chronically absent, and that's looking at about 987,000 students. So it's not a small number. This is a big issue. Representative Franklin, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Definitely brought a lot of light to chronic absenteeism, which we know really impact our academic progress for all students. My question was, you mentioned before some of the top reasons for transportation and healthcare. I know it's hard to have a kid come to school when he's got maybe vomiting and diarrhea, right? I know the healthcare piece might be more difficult to kind of address, but it sounds like if there's a transportation challenge, I know all of our districts do have public school buses that do drive transportation. I ask this question kind of more so, is there a threshold of chronic absenteeism that maybe requires a district or a school to come up and work with DOE with some sort of plan to try to implement, to try to drive down their percentages? I know the data exists, and like you said before, it's great to see it and have access to it to start addressing it, but is there any kind of mechanism where, or even training, right, where I'm not saying it has to be punitive, but maybe it's like, hey, we're hosting more trainings in these different regions with these specific schools to help you develop a plan, because also you don't know what you don't know.
You're recognized.
Thank you very much for that question, Representative. So we do have teams, and especially our Bureau of School Improvement. Our school improvement teams really do assist schools and districts as they are focusing on attendance. We as well believe that it is important to have a tiered approach as we are looking at attendance. And so our Bureau of School Improvement and our student services team are leading professional development and professional learning with districts as they're looking at that tiered approach. And so that's some of the topics that we talk about is, what are you doing for all of your students, right, to make sure you're there? And then how are you working with those families who may need more intensive time and effort depending on their unique circumstances? So the short answer is yes, we do provide professional learning and are working with districts. It is important as well that districts are looking at the schools inside of their own districts, because there is a reality with as large as some of our districts are in Florida. Now, certainly we have our small and rural districts as well, but with districts that may be larger in size, districts also are looking at the data of their individual schools, because again, the data per school may differ inside of a district itself.
Thank you. Representative Alvarez.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I appreciate you recognizing me. This one was related mostly to the first presentation, so I don't know who that might be on the panel. So I took some notes, and I'm surprised maybe about how chronic it is. So I was wondering if there is the rise is due mostly to excused or more to unexcused. Do we have a correlation?
Anika, would you be able to answer that?
So there, from my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, any excused versus unexcused absences are not published on the Florida Department of Education website. It's just what the chronic absence rates are. We're unable to differentiate what's the difference in where we're seeing an increase versus decrease when it comes to the types of absences.
Chancellor, do you want to take a stab at that?
Sure. Thank you very much for that. So, yes, what we do is districts define what the excused or unexcused absences are, whether it's due to illness or sometimes even, you know, whether it's students that are participating in a sports contest, right, or music contest, they may be missing days. And so no matter what that reason is, because at the department we believe that attendance is so important, we are still tracking those data to say the number of times that students are absent. And that's why it's important for us to track those data as absenteeism, because there is a reality that no matter what the reason a student is out of class, if a student is not present at school, it can potentially impact their academic progress. We are, as Attendance Works said, we are tracking the number of absenteeism, those days that students are absent, whether it's excused or unexcused, or even for other reasons, which might be disciplinary.
Chancellor, am I hearing that we do not have a statewide definition of absenteeism? This is left up to each district to
That's
define?
That districts do define that. That's right.
Thank you.
I have a couple little follow-ups.
Follow up away.
So we don't track excused versus unexcused, or we're just not capturing that at the state level?
That's a great question, Chair. So districts are capturing that, you're right, of excused and unexcused. What we publish on the website is that total number of absences. So districts are tracking those data.
Yes. Okay, so there's an opportunity to get more data that's a little more clear to us, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of kids in the Alvarez household. What is an excused versus what is an excused absence? And do we know what some of the most common ones are? And really where I'm going with this is I'm trying to figure out, like, sometimes kids got to go do things and parents got to go take them to do things. That it's just the functionality of life. And I want to make sure we carve that out. I mean, that's the, like, we had excused absences when we were coming up. So just trying to figure out the punitive, not punitive, but the more important targeted part. Is it unexcused or maybe an opportunity to get the child to school or help them to get there versus unexcused? So what are excused absences and what are maybe the most frequent ones we're hearing?
You're recognized.
Thank you very much. So I think what I would say is that we could potentially pull some definitions that districts are using for excused absences versus unexcused absences. But I think what, you know, our view is that having the student present in school is the most important.
Absolutely.
So, but we certainly could pull some of that information from some districts as they're determining and defining excused absences and unexcused absences.
Did you have another
follow-up? Yes, ma'am. Last one. Thank you.
Yes.
And thank you for that. Agreed. I was a professor at the University of Tampa for 9 years, and I had no attendance policy. And you could see that the ones that showed up, I mean, I wasn't their mom or dad. So if you showed up, you got taught, it reflected in your grade. So absolute correlation, I agree with you. I just want to make sure we get the distinction so we can make decisions based on data. So right now, if you're at 90%, and I think I wrote this down, that when attendance is below 90 and the student is behind academically, that's when we advocate for intervention. Is that right? Are we trying to continue that? Or is it only because they are absent? Is that what we want to do?
Thanks, Chair. So as a part of the early warning system, there are several indicators that schools and districts are looking at as they are monitoring the progress of children. So the one factor could be attendance. There is a reality that there are some students that may have excused absences as defined by a district, right? But their grades are still doing well. So it is one of the factors. So it is not the only, so it doesn't have to necessarily just be that a student has poor attendance and is doing poorly academically. Districts are often intervening because what they want to do is intervene before students kind of grow and have some of those other indicators that are showing that they're not on track for academic success. So attendance can certainly by itself be an indicator of why schools and districts are identifying and targeting that tiered support that may be targeting families, saying, we want to make sure your students get here and are present in school, because if they continue to miss more, it may negatively impact their academic performance.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. One of the things is if you look at data across the country, you'll see that if a student is chronically absent in pre-K, they're going to be chronically absent in first grade, in third grade, in fifth grade. It's almost a never-ending cycle. And so we want to, at Attendance Works, we believe that attendance data is the chief indicator that a child is not going to be successful in school. So while there are many different early warning systems, we really push for at school leaders, teachers, to look at your chronic absence data before anything else, because it starts very, very early, and it continues on through high school. So we believe it is the leading indicator of whether a child will be successful in school or not.
One more? You're good? Okay, Representative Casello.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to start off by saying thank you for this personalized, it brings the issue locally, you know, back to my district. And I want to bring it back locally because there's a glaring statistic here in my district, and I have a real concern here. It's Quantum High School. It's a charter school. Do these numbers that we gather, the data, the charter schools are involved in this?
Yes, Chair, we can track that data.
Okay. So my question is here, Quantum High School, 88% absentee. But proficiency reading is like 15%. Graduation rate, 23%. Teacher to student ratio 41-1. How do we intervene into a charter school? My bigger question is, how do they keep their charter?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. What I'd like to do, unfortunately, I don't have the sheet that the representative is looking at, but what I would be happy to do is to schedule some time offline. Our goal is to support all schools and districts as they are working to improve and continue their focus on academic performance. So happy to have an offline conversation with the representative so that we can help in any way that we can.
Absolutely. And Representative Casello, I did provide these statistics to all of you. I did not provide them to Chancellor Burns ahead of time. I apologize. It was not intentional. We can get you all of these. I'm sure you have access to them as well. But I think when you do take a deep dive into this, you're going to be somewhat surprised. Did you have another question, Representative Casello?
I don't. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anika, go right ahead.
Wanted to add, I actually created those profiles. That the data was pulled from the recently released data from the Florida Department of Education website. I just want to share for the record, there are schools that have worse numbers than 88%. There are schools with 97 and 98%. And I did not include that on the profile because it looked so unrealistic. I said, this doesn't look real. So I'm not going to put this one. But that's one of many schools across Florida that has those chronic absenteeism numbers.
Thank you for the info.
Thank you. The numbers don't lie. Representative Yeager, you had another question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. And I may have missed this, I apologize, but have we seen the data, a correlation between high absenteeism and low grades, right? Lower school grade overall? I didn't see it, it might have been mentioned, but is there a correlation there?
Generally, and I'm going to speak for Leon County because I reside here. Even if you look at Leon County schools data, most of the schools that are in most of your Title I schools and most of your schools where there's high concentrations of poverty have the highest chronic absenteeism rate. So although we haven't done a full fleshed out analysis of that, just scanning here in Leon, you can see that there's a correlation between performance and the number of days students are missing from school.
Do you have a follow-up? Okay. Representative Gant, do you recognize for a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My experience teaching, I would have students come from charter schools and come back to public schools where I was teaching. And I didn't get any data or anything on whether their baseline or attendance. So Chancellor Burns, you said that it is tracked from district to district, school to school. Is that a requirement as far as attendance is concerned to be provided if they go from charter to public or public to charter?
You're recognized.
What I'd like to do is get some information on that. Our representative and I can send that over to you.
Okay, thank you.
I'll make a note.
If you could send that to me, it'd be great. We can kind of disseminate that to the entire committee. We'd appreciate that. And Janice, did you have something you wanted to add to the last question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Yeager, I think two items from before as well. So the one that's not included in the A through F for Florida, it is in Arizona that the chronic absenteeism is part of the accelerator. But the other thing that we have seen data is that students that are absent more often are struggling, especially on their third grade literacy skills. We see the proficiency scores. We've seen what happens when you know, the Tanque Verde example is when folks focus, scores are going up. We've seen that, and there's nationwide research about graduation rates and whatnot from there. But the other one I wanted to just share with you, Madam Chair, Mr. Yeager, is that we're looking at exploring what the qualitative reasons are why students aren't. We've seen now the data, right? We know it's a problem, but what are some of the qualitative? Because we've heard all of these anecdotal, but what's the actual issue? And so in process from this.
Thank you. Representative Alvarez, you're recognized.
So I thought I was done, and then I can't let Brad be, you know, outdo me. No, I'm just kidding. After the Rep. Casello's reaction, you know, and then you're telling us that it's, like, 97% really means 3 out of 100 aren't chronically, right? And if at Hillsborough County, the one you gave me is 11 out of 100 aren't chronically absent. So is there any metrics that you look at for some sort of, and should we be talking as well about parental responsibility? All my kids,
I make sure they get to school. And listen, I'm not oversimplifying it in any way. I understand the realities of what it is to be poor, what it is to be challenged. That's not what I'm saying. But in my mind's eye, my natural lean says we can't have 89% of all of the kids, you know, in that one school have a challenge getting to school. There's got to be more. Where does parental parts come in?
I think it's a matter of awareness. And so I sit on many committees and I talk to parents, and the first thing they say is, oh, well, our absences are excused. Well, they're still missing instruction. And so I think there's this, and you add the pandemic layer to it. So we've normalized that it's okay to miss X amount of day of school. And so what we always push for is a communications campaign with parents. We need your child here every single day. We need you to make it happen. And so I think there's just again, even just looking at Leon County, there needs to be messaging that goes out to parents that, again, holds them accountable and shares the importance of everyday instruction. Because even if it's excused, they're still missing valuable time in the classroom. So I think it's the lack of awareness piece that as a state of Florida educators, that we need to really ramp up.
Anyone else? Michelle?
So I've been a little quiet because we're more of the community piece, but we house the statewide Florida campaign for grade level reading, where our goal is to make sure every child is reading proficiently by third grade. And we do that by focusing on school readiness, school attendance, parent engagement, and after school and summer learning opportunities. And our campaigns are working really hard. And so we have 24 campaigns that serve 36 counties throughout the state of Florida to really have chronic absence conversations, not only with stakeholders in their community, so that the community perspective is understanding that when you see a child out of school, you need to say, wait, why aren't you in school? And really have those conversations. So there's also a community perspective, not only a campaign to parents, but to communities as well, with the expectation that our children should be in an educational setting. They should be learning if we really want what's best for our economy and our communities and their future.
Thank you. Chancellor?
Thank you very much, Chair. And I think that's what I tried to share earlier of, I think, Representative, you're right when you talk about the family piece and parental involvement. I know that attendance works that you can't case manage out, but that's what I was sure. We believe it's so important to have our academic study teams work with families. Families are definitely a part of that conversation, and they should not be excluded and cannot be excluded as we help focus on students' academic success. So that's why it's critically important for our families to be involved in this conversation. The other point I would share about, that we've normalized, for Florida, I am really proud to say that under Governor DeSantis' leadership, that is why Florida really led the nation in reopening our schools during the COVID pandemic. And so Florida was one of the first states to welcome our schools back because we knew that and that it was important to have our students in school in the presence of a teacher. So just wanted to be able to share that as well.
Thank you. Representative Beltran, we're going to recognize you. And then Representative Gant, I think you had a follow-up from earlier. So Representative Beltran.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentations. I guess my question is, the chronic absenteeism is being defined as missing 10% of the days for whatever reason. I guess my question is, when you're coming out with these figures, I mean, they say one school, not in my district, but certainly in Hillsborough County's got 89%. Are these kids missing 11% of the days? Are they missing 50% of the days? Because I don't know, from knowing the rate of what's been defined as chronic absenteeism, I don't know the extent of, if it's 11%, that's one thing. If it's 50%, or can we get data on what the median or mean absenteeism? Because these figures, I think the way that it's been defined doesn't really tell me the extent of, tells me how pervasive it is, but it doesn't tell me the severity for these kids.
Great question. Thank you. Representative, yes.
Thanks,
Chancellor.
Thank you very much. So we'll go back and look and see it again after I get a copy of the data that you all are looking at. We can look and compare and see, if there's other additional data that we can share that'll give more context to what you're looking at.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Gant. Oh, go ahead, Anika.
I just wanted to share on the profile that's the minimum number of students. Well, that's the minimum percentage of students who have missed at least 18 days of school. So they could have missed 4 months of school. But again, that's not data that's readily available to the public.
Thank you. Representative Gant, for your follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the, I know it varies based on the district as what is excused or what is unexcused. Is data collected for students who have, may have disabilities or chronic illness? And if so, is that counted towards absenteeism? Or do they have a separate category where their absences are collected and reported?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, good question, Representative. So we are tracking the attendance of students, and those students with disabilities as well would be included, that we are tracking that as well. And so with that, it would, our IEP teams and those teams that plan the 504s are certainly tracking and looking at the attendance of students as well. All of our students need to be in school in the presence of a teacher. Now, there are certainly circumstances where a student may be on hospital homebound, for example, as part of that IEP team process, but that would be reflected in the school's profile of that student.
Thank you. Members, any further questions? Absolutely. Representative Yeager.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And I apologize for the questions, but I don't know if there's a question or a statement or what it is, but just sitting here and listening to the this absentee, and my first thought was, why don't we do an absentee grade, right? I mean, of a child, and say, listen, because what made me think about it was, when I'm in school, I remember perfect attendance, right? You got the perfect attendance award. Well, perfect's a pretty high level, right? But if you're above 90%, why aren't we giving an A award, right? A attendance awards across our school for kids that are above that 90% threshold every grading period, right? And celebrate, I think it goes back to your point you mentioned in the deck, was celebrating some wins. And hey, we can give A plus to the perfect attendance guys, right? I mean, that's, don't get me wrong, they should be rewarded for perfect attendance, but we should be recognizing those A members too that are actually there 95% of the time or plus 90%, right? They're above that threshold to stay there. I don't know if it's being done, things like that are happening, but I think it'd be a great way to incentivize that and kind of change that direction.
Any comments there?
I want to share, that's what we're pushing for. We're pushing for more tier one and tier two supports. That would be considered a tier one, where it's something that the whole school can benefit from. And so, unfortunately, from what we're seeing, not only in Florida, but across the country, is that there's more emphasis on the students who are truant, who have more unexcused absence. But again, we're not really recognizing your everyday student who is attending school regularly. So yes, that would be a great strategy we would support.
Michelle?
And in Leon County, and it just goes to show that schools that really are focusing on student attendance really thoughtfully, in Leon County, there's an elementary school that they have best day ever, and nobody knows when best day ever is gonna happen. And so they have it once a semester. And so it really incentivizes children to come to school because they're scared they could miss best day ever because nobody knows when it's going to happen. And it's really cool things such as bringing in snow, which in Florida is crazy, right? Snow for children to get to play in the snow and those types of things. So they're really big events that incentivize students to want to come to school, which also creates such healthy habits for our future workforce. We want them to understand that school is important and that when they go to work is important. And so we want to see that moving forward. So there are strategies that once you really look at the data and you're keeping an eye on it and looking at chronic absence that you can deploy that are really meaningful in ways that have huge impact.
I think you made a great point there, because if we are not helping children to realize that school is important, then how are they going to realize that work is important? How are they going to show up to work? These are our future leaders, and we need to invest more in this really important topic. Representative Kennedy, I think you had a question.
Thank you. Perfect segue, because this was exactly my question. You know, I'm on Ms. Chang's presentation on page 11, looking at the different buckets, and I think what we've heard today is that this issue is very complex. I've spent a couple of decades in the classroom. I understand the challenges. And so as I look at these different buckets, the barriers, the aversion, the disengagement, the misconceptions, I'm kind of focused on disengagement. In order for kids to feel like they need to be at school, school needs to be a place that they need to be. I'm very interested in this issue of engagement. I'm very interested in what's actually happening at school. And I'm very concerned about the reality that parents and students sometimes don't feel like they're going to miss very much. And I think one of the great opportunities that we have is to continue to make school a place that kids don't want to miss, and parents are clear about the positive, important work that happens at school every day. And so I certainly understand that that's not the only solution, but I really do think that we need to think about this engagement issue as a very important part moving forward. In addition, Representative Alvarez, I think you brought up a great point about parental responsibility, but they have to go to something that they understand matters. So any thoughts about that as an issue?
Amen.
I think everybody agrees. Chancellor?
Just thank you for that. I think that's a great point about the strategy. And, you know, I feel so lucky and privileged, as we've heard some representatives say, having spent as much time in the classroom and a school as I did, that when I'm out and about in this role and I'm able to visit schools across the state, there are schools that have some strategies where they are focused on really on attendance, you know, looking at that, doing those pizza party type days, or really trying to build a school. We know that good leaders in schools matter also. And so the right leader in a school will set the conditions with their teachers so they're focused on the academic success of students, which also includes the attendance of students and families. So welcoming those families in, making sure families feel invited, understand the importance of school, welcoming students, making sure the students understand the importance of school. I am excited to say that we do have some great examples here in Florida. We do have work to do to continue to focus on the academic success of our students, but we also have some great examples that we can start to learn from as well.
Thank you, Chancellor. Janice, did you want to comment on that?
Madam Chair, the engagement side, though, I think there's already so many other wins that can happen. It's not just incentivizing the student. I haven't heard of a statewide incentive. It's happening at the school level, so there may be an opportunity there. But it's also getting the business community involved. So many of the, the prizes or the $5 coupon for pizza is coming from local businesses that are also engaged within that school. So you get an extra win, where now you have the community really rally behind. Everyone's vested for the school to be successful. So I think it's also an opportunity to really bolster the entire community and have business that so often wants to be involved with schools, but they don't know how to engage. This is a fantastic opportunity to do so.
Thank you. And thank you all for being here today. Members, the four people in front of you are such great resources for us in this committee and through this process. Not just with chronic absenteeism, but in general. So I encourage you to reach out to them. They will make themselves available. And I trust each one of you daily. We have lots of conversations. So thank you for your time and being here. And I also would like to add, in the past several years, we have put forth a lot of good policy in education. And that's great. But it's not great if children aren't showing up and we're not able to use the policies that we put in place to create successful, you know, human beings and children and future leaders for our community. So even though I'm sure you all are shocked at the numbers that you've seen, and I thought 66% for one of my schools was a lot, and Representative Casello, I'm really shocked at yours. I'm sure there are more of you that are going to walk away a little bit dumbfounded today. We are not attacking parents here, and we are not attacking our school system or Department of Education. What we're doing is taking this and looking at a new perspective and through a new lens, a great opportunity to serve our children and our communities. And you have not heard the last of chronic absenteeism in this committee. So thank you, as always, for showing up today and being engaged. It's really important that you do that. I love our committee. Next week, we will not have a committee meeting, but we will start back up in January, and we will not only have a presentation, but we'll also be hearing some bills. I know you guys have been excited to get started with that as well. And with that, I wish you all happy holidays, and Representative Candidate, without objection, we will rise. This meeting is adjourned.